Thanks for joining us live. I am here with the Jason Hodge, and he's going to be talking to us about mastering your audience. It's a nice title, by the way. So let me ask you a few questions, and then we'll get back to you guys getting to know Jason. So let me push some more buttons because I want you to follow along with me. We're going to get to know Jason by asking him a few questions like, you wear many hats, media architect, content strategist, live stream producer. You can you break it down to what that means in your world?
I help my clients tell stories. I help them tell their stories to the segments of their marketplace that matters most. And I help them deliver an authentic message. And that's really what I'm focused on. I want people to know the real them so they can see how their contribution to the marketplace can enhance people's lives.
Nice. Okay. What inspired you to focus so deeply on storytelling and media alignment?
You know, when I look back, it's always been a part of me. From the time that, as long as I can remember, from the time I was in elementary, I was always asking people their story in some way, shape, or form. So it's kind of funny that this just happens to be my profession now. I get to ask people their story for money. So it's pretty nice. Cool.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've helped a lot of people develop their message. What's a common mistake you see people make when they first try to tell their story?
They think they have to perform it.
Ooh.
You don't have to perform, you just have to be. And folks, what I found is that at times they need to be given permission to be authentic and for that to be okay for them to show up however they show up without editing. And that they can get in front of the audience that resonates with them. The key is that they have to be willing to show up, though.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice. You know I'm nosy. Can you give us, like, a little example of this? Pretty close.
A perfect example, I think, would be when people live stream for the first time. And they think that in the live streaming, they have to start out with, hey, how you doing today? And whatever that looks like in their mind, right? Yeah, hey, everybody. And it's totally outside of their character. They don't do that regularly. But they feel that now that the camera is on or the microphone is in front of them, that they've got to create this character. And then it's that character that ends up repelling the people who they want to get in front of because they're not really showing up inside of their zone. And it's something about when a person is inside of their zone of genius that it becomes a magnet. They become the magnet because they are operating on purpose and in their who. So I find that to be the thing. And that's why people get nervous because they show up in character as opposed to using their character.
It's like, wow, that's deep, because I think I found myself doing something like that. So, yeah, it's like, camera's on, you see the light, it's time to perform.
Right.
Like, no, be yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think that the work that I do gives people that permission to be themselves. It's okay to be yourself because what you bring to the table, nobody else can bring to the table. And you have to be confident enough in that that you show up and however those chips fall, that's how they fall. But you know that you are ultimately in service and you bring value to the table.
I can see that. Mm-hmm. I believe that.
Absolutely.
Okay. So now I think people have gotten to know you a little better. So now I want to do an introduction.
All right.
So you've met V. Jason Hodge, a master of media architecture, storytelling, strategist, and live stream producer with a decade of experience across TV, radio, film, and digital. Jason helps creators and brands turn their stories into profitable content. From major productions to grassroots community media, he's built a career on making messages matter. And hopefully you guys got a little taste of that when he answered these first three questions on helping us on our way to get to know him better. So one aversion with, let's see, like our version of ourselves when we're putting ourselves out there on live stream. Jason is the person that can help us do that. Jason is the person that can help you get your real, let me try to say the word, Jason, authentic self. Hope you keep it real before the camera lights turn on and you go live.
Yeah.
So hopefully that helps you get to know Jason just a little bit more. So now our next question, let me get our category up here. Let's see. I think this is it. Yes, understanding the who, what, where, how, and why. So let's talk about the who of your audience. How can entrepreneurs and founders really identify and connect with the right people? How do you know who your audience is?
Well, you have to know what your end goal objective is. Where do you want to end up? Because whatever it is that you want to ultimately build or the impact that you want to make, that is going to determine your who 100% of the time. Because based on that, you have to backtrack and say, all right, so now that I want to end up here, there are a series of people in my network or outside of my network that need to be connected with in order to make that possible. So you start looking at, okay, based on that end goal, there are three people between me and that end goal. Those are the three people that you need to meet. How you get to those three people, that's the strategy. What do they care about that you align with that can make that a comfortable and viable conversation? How do you have that story go before them for them to say, you know what, I like this person. I want to know more about what they've got going on. Let's talk.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think we're doing here right now with us getting to know you. So when someone asks, what do I talk about? How do you guide them towards content that aligns with their goal? You have like a series of questions. You have to fill out a form before they get to talk with you.
Well, if I'm taking them on as a consulting client, then yeah, there is an assessment. It's the BSAT. It's the business solutions assessment tool that I take them through, and that helps me understand their values. It takes them 7 different sciences in order to identify the top 7 values that they resonate with, that they base all of what they do professionally on. And through understanding those values and knowing what values are in conflict, I will help them to identify the pillars of their business and then the types of media or content, the types of stories that they need to highlight where they're concerned in order to get in front of the marketplace. So they do go through an assessment, and then I determine even if we're a good fit, because there's some assessments that I say, okay, you know what? You're not a good fit for what it is that I do. However, let me direct you to the place that will be a great fit for you. So it's a good tool. It's a great editing tool, both parts.
That's nice. So have you seen like a common story that needs to be told, like a common theme of the stories that need to be told by many of the people you've worked with so far?
Okay, I'm biased, but I think every story needs to be told. And it just comes down to, how are you telling that story? What do you want to take place on the other side of telling that story? If the aim is that you want, we'll say something very basic, you want to sell more product. All right. What about your product is going to rank on the person's radar that is going to make them stop in their tracks with all of this noise coming at them for them to pay attention to you? And then what about your product is going to solve their problem? What problems do they have, and how are you the solution to that problem? So I think that coming down to caring, you got to care first, and that way your caring operates your sales based on service, not on the numbers that you want to have your cash register ring on. If I know that I'm in service to you, then I'm going to serve you, not sell to you.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I like that. So in terms of where platforms are constantly changing, sometimes good, sometimes it's just terrible, how do you help people choose where to show up?
Well, that comes down to the research. If I know that your company is one that reaches mothers who are, you know, with newborns and children in elementary school and all of that, my next question is, well, where do they hang out? Some of them may be on social media. Some of them may not even touch a computer or a phone. Maybe they are at the grocery store. Maybe they're at daycares. So the idea is to understand your audience, your ideal client or customer, at such a level that you understand how they move. You know, so I will go through a series of questions, or have my client go through a series of questions, to identify their marketplace. And then based on who their marketplace is, it's actually quite easy, because then it comes down to, how do you serve the marketplace? Sometimes it's a question to your marketplace, how can I serve you? How do I meet whatever problem that you're trying to solve? How can I help you with that?
Really does make sense, because I've seen people at grocery stores have booths where they talk to people about their service products. I've seen people at Sam's with booths talk about services and products. So yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I never thought about doing it myself until you said it. I've seen it out in the wild, but I never thought about doing it. Okay, so here's the why. Mm-hmm. How important is it to know your why before creating content, and how do you find it if you are unclear?
I love that question. You know, I would say that when you're looking for your why, sometimes your content can be the very mechanism that you use in order to identify your why. You may say, hey, and whether you're on social media, you're inside of a forum, you're in a mastermind, you may say, you know what, I would like to start a business, or I would like to do A, B, and C, but I don't know where to begin. And so I'm reaching out here to my community to see how would I go about figuring that out. And then you'll start getting people asking you questions. Well, what about this? What about this? Some will give you suggestions, sight unseen. They have not found out the first thing about you, but they're going to give you suggestions. Those you put on one show. And then you'll have those who will ask you some probing questions. Tell me about yourself. Tell me what you're good at. Tell me what you resonate, what you're drawn to. They start to go deeper and unpack the things for you. And then you have those who may take you through things like an assessment or what have you. They may understand who you are based on the verbiage that you use, how you move online or offline. And they'll say, you know what, I've been noticing that you have a natural knack for this or a tendency towards this. Have you considered this? And so then it's your job to either A, dismiss it, embrace it, explore it, and then you see if this is something that you do have a natural resonance or that you naturally gravitate towards. So I think that it comes down to asking questions, not waiting for a person to, you know how sometimes you will ask a question or you are participating in a conversation, waiting for the pause so you could just input. And then you are participating in other conversations where you really want to understand. If you seek to understand, then you can come up with the answers. So I think that they need to go in those areas. Who wants to understand you? Get those answers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And I definitely remember doing both of those things in conversations. It's usually when somebody has asked for the answer and they had stated that they're struggling. I just want to say the answer. But it's best to listen first.
It is. And the minute that somebody starts just giving you information without first vetting you, then maybe shake some salt on the answers because they don't know enough about you unless they've been observing you closely and they do know about you. And that's the caveat there. That is where you can make a differentiation. If they know you because they've been observing you, then you can take a little bit more to heart what they tell you. If they're just giving you information without qualifying the content that they're giving you, then I wouldn't stake my life on that.
Understood. Makes sense. So the next one is turning story into strategy. Mm-hmm. So with that is what's the difference between telling your story and strategically crafting a narrative?
Well, when you're telling your story, you have to determine what's most important to you. Is it more important to you to get the story off your chest, or is it more important for you to use your story as a tool to serve? If you're just simply telling your story, it's like, I got to tell this story, okay? Have the expectation that at the end of telling that story, you would have gotten it off of your chest, and if that's okay, then the story was mission accomplished. You accomplished your goal. If your goal, however, is to impact lives, then you have to understand what part of my story is going to make that impact. Maybe the story is to help people relate to you better so that they open their ears in order to hear what you have to say, some value that you have to impart to them. So you tell them a story where it's a story of relation. I can relate to you. I understand where you're coming from. I've been there myself. This is how I got through it. Okay, wow. So you understand me? Yeah. Wow, that story does remind me of a situation that I was going through or am going through. Maybe this person can help me. What else do they have to tell me? Okay, see, that opened the door. A story where you are describing something, and maybe it's a technical thing. You know, you are alerting them that based on your expertise, you are qualified to solve their problem. So you give them a breakdown of a story. Maybe that's a war room story. Oh, I remember when I was in the studio, we were doing a live broadcast, and everything that can go wrong in that control room was going wrong. However, the way that we were wrapped so tight, nobody on the stage knew anything was going wrong. Because we had certain protocols in place, we made sure that, you know, we caught the fires before they made it to the stage. Okay, so that delivers your expertise. Under pressure, you know that your professionalism can stand up in order to keep people from knowing that things are going wrong and you're fixing it along the way. Now they know, okay, this person can handle high stress and they're going to get the job done at the fulfillment time. Okay, a story that builds confidence. Maybe it's a story that just wants to pull on the heartstrings to let you know that you do understand how to feel, empathy, you know. So there's different reasons why you tell different stories. You have to determine what is the outcome that you're looking for, and then which story or which angle of your story do you need to share so that you can make that open door.
That makes a lot of sense. I gotta tell you, Jacob, when I first heard that everybody needs to tell their stories, I hated it. I hated their boring stories. I hated their long, drag-out boring stories. I could care less if they needed a bigger boat. Right. I could care less if they were taking guitar lessons or if they had a private jet. I didn't want to hear that. I just wanted the information that they told me that I was going to get. But now I know from getting to hang out with you every Friday that sometimes it's good to have explainer stories. It's good to have how-to stories. It's good to have different versions of stories, not just, I'm taking lessons, I'm playing golf, I'm working out this week. I hate those stories. Mm-hmm. But the way you tell your stories, they're great. And you can go on forever. If you make children's books, if you have like an audio book or whatever, besides just your podcast, people would listen to you for hours. So I just had to throw that out here.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, how do you repurpose a single piece of content across different platforms without losing its meaning or power?
That's a good question. I've seen a lot of people go through this and just take content that they post on Facebook and they just post it across the board, which is not really how you need to do that. In order to make the content effective on each platform, you have to understand the nature of the platform. You know, I like to say read the room. In reading the room, you go into the platform and, for lack of a better term, troll it for a while. You know, troll through it, flip through it, go into the different areas of the platform. If it's a platform that has a lot of groups and communities like Reddit or Facebook, go into those groups, see the temperature of the group. How do people speak in the group? How do they operate? How do people engage on news feeds? Because based on how the information comes in, it determines how people respond or react to that information. So understand what you need to do. Like if you need to tell a story, that's more of a Facebook thing. I see more longer content on Facebook. So then tell a story, wrap the content in a story. If it needs to be straight to the point, you know, because it's like you're dealing with more news people, that's like a Twitter thing or an X. You go through and you have, a soundbite enough to intrigue the person to want to click on the link to read what you've got or what you posted. Something to stir the conversation. X is great for that. If you are looking for something and you need some visuals that are just, succulent and they're juicy, you know, things like that, that's like an Instagram, that's a Pinterest. If you've got something that you want people to put on their vision boards and their wish lists, that's a Pinterest thing, because they will pin it and then save it for later so they can come back and purchase it. So I would say identify what platforms do, what platforms are good for, and then create your marketing mix to go into those platforms in the way that the platform would receive you. You then have to make sure that the content that you produce, you can extract the format of that content for the platform that you're going to send it to. And then when you send it there, you look to see, okay, how effective was it? And then you tweak it from there. How do I make it better? You always have to ask that question. So that was a long way of saying that every platform that you got, you've got to recondition your content to meet the needs of that platform, and then you're able to share it there.
Has anyone ever told you that you use story like the scientific method? Like, you know what goes where, you know when it goes, and you know how. It's like methodical.
Mm-hmm. Nobody's told me that, but I can see that. I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, so profit and impact. You talk about profitable storytelling. Can you give us an example of how a well-crafted story directly leads to a business win, either for you or someone you've worked with?
Yeah, I can. Okay, so years ago, I was working with this organization that dealt with, at the time, the terminology was the seriously and persistently mentally ill. It was a fundraiser dinner that we had to do, and we had to tell the story of the organization. So I came down there with the cameras, interviewed the clients that they served, interviewed the staff, interviewed some of the board members. And then I had to place each one of their story components into that video in a way that made a common through line. You know, it told the story, captured the essence of the organization. And then we had to present that for their fundraiser dinner. I remember that when I gave them the final draft just before finalization, they were going to play the video, and then they were going to do the ask at the end of the event. I said, you don't want to do that. You want to share the video, and then you want to do the ask immediately after the video when everybody's hearts are open, because they know what you're about. It's not time for them to cool down. They're in their emotions and their logic, and that would be the perfect time for you to say, okay, in order for us to do this work at a greater scale, to expand capacity, we need your support. Pass the envelopes around, have them make their checks, have them make their pledges right then and there. Well, the board didn't want to do that. They were like, no, 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 we don't want people to feel like we're pressing them. So, no, we're going to show the video, and then we're going to ask at the end of the event, and that way they can give on their way out. They didn't want to impose. All I said to them was, okay, I tell you what, I've got to go across town, so I want you to show the video to the board. Just show them the video, this draft, and then reiterate, it should be right after the video. By the time that I went across town and came back to the organization, they had shared the video for the board to see. Unanimously, the board said, we need to ask right after the video is aired. And they did that, and they raised tens of thousands of dollars from that event. Timing is everything. You can't let people get too cold with your message because they forget.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense. So now I'm thinking, what can I do with the videos I have where I can, I don't know, tug at somebody's heartstring. I've seen, but I didn't think about it until you said it. Yeah. I'm in a board meeting with the United. They told a story and they asked for money, and I didn't mind giving.
Mm-hmm.
So, again.
Yeah, you got to understand the purpose of the story, because the purpose of the story is, now I'll give you a scenario. Why do we have soap operas?
Soap operas. Yeah. I love a good story.
So they have a never-ending story that goes on for decades, and they sell product. Because the content is not the soap opera. The content is the commercials that run in between the scenes of the soap opera. The filler is the soap opera. The soap operas fill in the blanks long enough for you to get ad after ad after ad that's paying for that space on the airwaves in order to sell their product. The actors that are in the soap opera, they are hired by those that are buying the ads. Okay? Even though the production company has them in there, but the production company is there to make profits. So they create the soap opera in order to entertain people, to keep their attention long enough to place the ads in front of them for them to make purchases. They make their purchases with their hearts and their minds first, and then they go to the store and buy the stuff. What's the sugar bowl for?
There's a sugar bowl? Is that a game?
Sugar bowl, the orange bowl, the Super Bowl, all of those bowls are the entertainment in the format of sports, football, in order to sell advertising space, to sell seats in chairs, to sell merchandise from the, it's for profit. So each one of those arenas is used to generate sales, to generate revenue in these different verticals, these different areas, from merchandise that you wear, hats that you wear, like I'm wearing my son's merchandise, and the clothes that you would put on, again, that's gear. All of those things have a price tag attached to them. And in order to get people into one locale, one area, they will entertain them with the football. They'll entertain them with the basketball, with the baseball, with the soccer, with the rugby, with the hockey. Fill in the blank, whatever it is, with the soap opera, with the theater, with the, all of it generates money. So we use entertainment in order to move a revenue model forward. So when you tell your story, you have to understand, what story is it that's going to captivate the segment of my marketplace that is willing to spend money with me? And you tell that story in order to make that connection. Some stories will connect you because it's the mission. The story of the mission is going to grab the heart of that person who is willing to support. So they buy in with their time and their energy, their thoughts, their evangelism. They tell other people about the organization. And that's nonprofit, the story that you tell in nonprofits. You've got those who are needing people to work for them. So they have to tell the story of the company. That's the admin story. Why would a person want to work for your company? There's a story that has to be told to get people in the seat to interview for an opportunity to work at your company. Why would people want to be in your community? Well, there's a story that you got to tell for people who want to be in your community to support from within. And you get volunteers. There's a story that has to be told for volunteers to come and volunteer for your organization. How do you get people to buy in, even at the level of being a teacher's assistant? Well, the story has to resonate from that teacher for that teacher's assistant to want to assist them. Everything has a story that is going to cause a person to buy in to that story to then support what you've got going on to get you to your finish line.
You're connecting the dots for so many things for me now. Like all the things I've seen when I was little till adulthood now, I understand just because we're having this conversation. Mm-hmm. Cars don't sell, auto markets, car lots, dealerships, they don't sell cars for you to have a car. They have cars so they can finance you.
Yes, but how do they sell those cars? It's a story.
Yep.
The story that they tell you in order to either increase your status or to give you convenience, their reliability, safety. There's all these different triggers that auto dealers use in order to sell the product of the car. Some, they do focus on safety. That's Volvo. Okay. Some, they focus on speed or status. Well, status, that will be like your Lexus, your Rolls Royce, your, you know, luxury, things like that. You've got magazines that sell magazines based on those things. You've got the Robb Report. That's for folks who like high-end living, you know. You see? So everything has a story that it shares, and it has a segment of the marketplace that that story resonates with, which is how they get in front of eyes and ears and have people share them. But you have to know the story.
I understand. Not too long ago, got a Volvo, and the guy selling us the car says, oh, it's one of the best safety cars. I'm like, is it or is it marketing? But yeah, I understand. Definitely, marketing helps create the story. And yeah, that helps people buy because there's a good story behind it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So what do people misunderstand about creating content that actually converts or drives profit?
People misunderstand the tactics around it and the strategy around it because they're looking at tactics and strategy as trickery as opposed to authenticity. You know, if I think, okay, I need to produce 7 pieces of content pay, and, you know, I need to make sure that that hits a million different places. Okay, they're looking at, all right, I need to bombard the marketplace and fill it with numbers. You can do that, and that's expensive, and you may have a lot more misses than hits. As a matter of fact, guaranteed, you're going to have a lot more misses than hits, because if your content is relevant, then you don't need to produce a lot of content. You need to produce that one piece of content very well, and then you extract from it the platform that you're going to share it on. So one content, let me make sure that it gets out 1,000 places, because 1,000 places need this content. I don't need to get this content to 1,000 places because I'm moving content. I need to make sure that the people who are on those platforms who need this information are served at a level. So it's my job. It is my ethical responsibility to make sure that this solution gets in front of these eyes and ears who desperately need it. That's the difference.
That makes sense. For when I first got started with live streaming, I strongly believed that I needed to be omnipresent. I had the ability to live stream to 40 plus platforms, and I was going to be on every last one of them. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I couldn't be on every last one of them, and every last one of them didn't care about live streaming or virtual events. So I had to find a place where my content fit and people wanted that content. Mm-hmm. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next question is, for those who are overwhelmed by content creation, what's one small shift they can make to start seeing real results?
I'll say this. Don't go through the motions of it. It's the difference between, are you cooking a meal or are you going for the fast food of your business? If you're cooking a meal, then you're going to take your time to make sure that each ingredient, it hits properly. If it's fast food, then it's like, I don't have time to do this. And so you just kind of throw everything into a bag. Here it is in the marketplace. And you've got to determine, is what you're giving to the marketplace for you or for them? If it's for you, well, then I don't have time to do this. So let me get this out the door, because you're bothering me with the demand on what it is that I've got to do to get in front of you to cause you to buy from me. If it's for them, then it's, okay, let me do this and let me take the time that is needed in order to make sure that you fully understand how this is going to benefit you and how this is going to solve your problems. So what is necessary for that to take place? And then you do that. There's a difference. If I'm about me, then I'm going the convenience fast food route. If I'm about you, then I'm going to make sure that you're served well, and I'm going to charge you well for it as well. Okay? This is not where I take time and then I don't make it cost effective. I have to charge you well in order to make sure that I can sustain business to serve you well. And I think that that is where people also miss it, is that they start to, and I'm not saying everybody, but those that are struggling in this area, they are making their business a commodity, and they're not charging what's necessary in order to maintain the team that they need to maintain in order to serve the client at the highest level. So they end up doing the client a disservice, unfortunately, themselves a disservice, unfortunately, because they're looking at the person who is turning out, let's say, like websites, for example. Oh, well, my service, I put up websites for $79 a site. Okay. And then that person who is now trying to beat price, they say, well, I guess I could put it up for $59, but it's going to take them 10 hours to do it. 10 hours, that's $5.90 an hour. And it takes them a whole team. So the whole team has to split $5.90 an hour. Okay. That's the reality of it. Now, when you charge properly, you say, okay, well, I'm not actually in the market for the client who is wanting to pay $79 for me to put a website up. I deliver quality, and these are the things that I do, And these are the numbers that I help my client achieve by doing what I do at the top level. So who's your client? What is their income range? You know, what is it that what you do can help them achieve? Will it help increase their business by $100,000 per year? And you're charging $20,000 to do a website? Well, then you've increased what they have invested in your services. You've increased them by a factor of five. Is it that what you do is going to help them make millions of dollars over the years? Well, now that you only charge them $50,000 to make millions, you know, again, you have increased them exponentially, but you have to be solid on those numbers, which means that you've got to understand the client, you've got to understand the needs, you've got to understand the industry. So that means you've got to do your research. And that's where you start asking questions. Tell me about what it is that you want to achieve. Client A, tell me what it is that you've done that has not worked. Tell me what it is that you have budgeted in order to make sure that you've got things covered, bases covered. You know, what are you currently working with? What tools do you have at your disposal? You know, you have to get granular with them in order to understand these are the things that they've got going on. And this is a fit or this is not a fit. If they tell you, look, I've got only $5,000 to do this, and you know that it's going to take at least a minimum of $10,000 to do a mediocre job, that's not your client. You know, and then you have to be okay with walking away and saying, you know, that's great. Here's the type of clientele that I work with. Let me give you a referral, because I do know folks who give $5,000 sites. And then you pass them on to maybe a colleague who does that type of work. And then you may have a relationship that's already built in with that colleague. And then you get your commission off of that. Maybe you're an affiliate of that colleague. Hey, I can only take this level and up of clientele. That level and down, I'm passing to you. If you're good with that, we can make an arrangement. So you help build their business. You help make sure that you're still profitable, but you're not taking on business that is going to actually tank your business because you can't afford to do $5,000 sites.
Nice. So let me ask, do you believe in value-based pricing, or do you prefer fixed pricing, or does it depend on the client?
It depends on the client. I can see a scenario for all of the above, fixed, value-based. And you have to understand what is mutually beneficial. Some clients may not have the money, but it would do you the better service to do their work for them, even if it costs you money. And so this is where you have to know your numbers. Say, for example, that client is a client who is prominent, right? They are prominent in a space that you want to be in. And by your serving them at a high level, it is going to automatically market your services, market your value to everybody inside of their network. It gives you bragging rights. You're able to say, well, yeah, this is the client that I work with. This is what we were able to do with them. This is how we've elevated or expanded their brand, their business. So that becomes your own built-in testimonial with a case study that can demonstrate you absolutely know what you're doing and opens the door for you to get more clientele. Well, question is, what do you normally spend or invest in your marketing? And can that be offset by your having a live example, a case study that shows you absolutely know what you're doing? And if so, then that would be where you would make a judgment and say, you know what, I can work with this client because the benefits outweigh the costs. Now, if you're getting absolutely nothing from it, if that is the type of client who not only will they not share you out, they won't even let anybody know that the value that you added to the equation for them benefits them. They've got you signing an NDA where you can't even show that you've done this, and they take it on as if they've done it all themselves, and they're not paying you, probably not a good fit. You have to lay them off. You got to roll with that.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I was going to ask you about I'll just ask you, what are your thoughts on finding like 10 nonprofits, charities, and making them your top 10 case studies? sharing the information with each other, helping them out, they help you out.
Okay, well, it all depends because 10 is an arbitrary number. So I would ask the question, why 10? And then it all depends. If you are breaking into the nonprofit arena and you are dealing with 10 nonprofits that have the same thing going on, you know, like maybe they all deal with wounded animals or broken trees or you name it. And then you want to work out a system. So then you take 10 of the same thing and then you're tweaking your system along the way. Well, that's your market research right there. That is to see how efficient you can make your model. Then your model, you can take that information and say, okay, out of the 10 that I've worked on, I've gotten a 90% success rate or a 100% success rate. I know that this model works 100% of the time. It's not speculative anymore. So now I have a model that I can license and I can use that as a training tool or mechanism for other organizations like this. Now you can market to those other organizations and you have these 10 case studies that show I know what I'm doing. You may say I want 10 different types of nonprofits because I want to try my technique, my strategy on these 10 different nonprofits. So I'm going to take them on at a nominal fee. I don't necessarily believe in that you do things for free because I don't believe that doing things for free, and it took a little while getting there, but I don't believe that doing things for free establishes value in what you do. The Bible says that a workman is worthy of their hire. So I believe that. And so when it comes to having 10 different organizations, but you're still using the same tool or mechanism, then you could say, okay, I want to identify that this mechanism works across the board. So I've taken 10 different organizations, and then you are documenting that. 10 different organizations, one mechanism, I'm going to get successful results across the board. Now, if you can prove that that works, now you have a licensable intellectual property that works across the board, no matter what nonprofit that you, or at least it works across these 10 different verticals or 10 different types of nonprofits. Now you know that this is something that may be universal, that you can approach any organization. And again, you go back and use the organizations that you got success from as your case studies. This is what I was able to do for them. This is what I can do for you. Here's the price tag on that.
Really nice. I appreciate you sharing that answer with me. The 10 came from, you know, I'm a graphic designer. 10 is a minimum portfolio, 12 max. So I just threw that out there. Okay. So looking ahead, what's next? This is just the beginning of your four-part series. What can people expect as we move deeper into your frameworks? And I want to throw this up here also because your next talk is on the 2nd of May.
Yes. Yes. Okay, well, what's next is, I've got a lot of things that I'm doing right now, in the media architecture space. So the movement that I'm on right now is to, for one, create great content for a television network that I do the media architecture for. That's the Got One Television Network. The other thing is to give people the information and the insight that is necessary for them to be able to unpack what they've got going on. Okay, this is about clarity. How do you gain the clarity so that you understand which direction that you need to go in and what stories that you need to tell in order to get you there faster and more precisely? So a series of different methods that you can use in order to break the ice for yourself and develop relationships along the way. Really, when it all boils down, there's a ton of things that you can do that are tactical and strategic. I think the best strategic thing that you can do is develop relationships. So understanding what stories to tell, how do you think that through? And I just launched a Mastering AI Prompts training. So I'm building that out over time, probably over forever, because it's a conversation that people need to have. And what I found is that folks, when it comes to AI, there's a lot of noise out there and folks understanding how to make AI work for them. They're having AI do the work for them, but not do the heavy lift. And you don't want AI to do the work. You want it to do the heavy lift. Here's how I differentiate between those two. If you're not an expert in your space, then you can leverage AI to get you the expertise. If you are an expert in your space, then you can leverage AI to organize the expertise and then to move that expertise out into the marketplace. If you're not an expert and you use AI, you leverage it in order to gain the expertise, then from there, you can then gain the expertise and then prove the model out and then have AI help you do the heavy lift on pushing it out into your marketplace after you've identified the marketplace. So there's different ways that you can use AI. I want to clarify to folks how you can use the tools and not have the tools use you. So I hope that answered your question, but I do have quite a few things going on. I'm excited about things. I think that we're moving into a time where folks are looking for more authenticity, and I want to see more content produced that gives people the truth authentically and provides content or media that is going to educate, enhance, and elevate people. Oh, can't hear you, Erica.
Sorry. But I was just saying that that's really nice. I'm looking forward to hearing more about all the stuff you got going on because you do a lot. You have a lot of energy. You have to have a lot of energy to do as many jobs as you do. So, and I like hearing about all the work that you produce, the people you help. Your Junebug stories are great. And I like seeing them on social media.
Yeah, and they are tasty. Junebugs Incorporated, yeah. Absolutely, company, love what they're doing. Love some of the partnerships and collaborations that we're getting into with that company and some of the nonprofits out here. So, yeah, there's a lot on the books for them. So stay tuned on that as well. And check them out. Go to junebugsauce.com. And buy some of their sauces. It all goes to a great cause.
Nice. Okay. So I'm not sure if I've asked this, but I'm going to ask, and you can let me know if I am repeating myself. Why is now the right time for entrepreneurs and creators to master their media presence?
Because I think what folks, no matter where you are in society or politics or what have you, I think that it's becoming very clear that it is time for everybody to take full responsibility for their own destinies. And if you're not using the tools that you've been given from birth to put yourself in a better position, you made yourself at the wrong end of circumstances. You've got to be able to take what you've got. I don't care how little or how much you've got, whatever it is. If you have one bobby pin, sounds ridiculous, but that one bobby pin, I need you to figure out how that bobby pin make you $1 million. The reason why I picked something as arbitrary as a bobby pin is because I know of a person who took bolts, you know, bolts and screws. Yeah. Bolts or bolts and nuts. Yeah. It took bolts, millions of dollars on just bolts. It's commodities. So whatever you've got to work with, you can leverage it to make yourself an exorbitant amount of cash flow and opportunity, open doors. Okay. And it doesn't take anything more than being willing to think as if there is no box, because there isn't. And then to make connections, tell you, and develop relationships and open for opportunities. So I think that it is important that folks get on the good foot and start doing the things that are innately a part of them and explore how you can expand on that. Build your capacity, your knowledge base, consult and collaborate with people, and open up more doors for opportunity. Oh, you're muted.
Yeah. I was just saying, nice. I like how you make everything so clear. Okay, so audience-driven interactivity. Question and answers for everybody's watching. What would you say was, I can't even say it, or I can't even read it now. What's one question you would love the audience to ask you?
That's a good question. So maybe it is, and we might have covered it already, but where do you begin? You know, I found that I've dealt with professionals who are transitioning from one life that they knew, and they may have been going from being in the corporate space, and now they're entrepreneurs. And those are two entirely different realities. Entrepreneurs, they're regular. Thank you.